What's up, guys? This is Jacques. Welcome back to Unpopular. I have Elizabeth Vargas from The Real Housewives of Orange County on today. She was a one-season wonder, but I think you're really going to like her, and you may even have a different impression of her after you listen to our interview. I really loved her. Like, I was already a fan of her on the show, and I think she was underrated, but after talking to her, I have even, like, more respect for her, honestly. Like, I just think she's a really strong and positive person that has overcome a lot. She has done a lot of interviews, by the way, in, like, the last week, but mine's the best, honestly. So if you've heard her somewhere else, just don't worry, you can still listen to my interview. Mine is the best, not afraid to say it. I'm going to talk more about her and her upbringing in a cult in a little bit, because I think you'll be shocked by her past, because it was only kind of like touched upon a little on The Housewives. But first, let's just discuss a few very important topics, such as Taylor Swift and Chrissy Teigen. They are psychos. I'm not even kidding. So Chrissy Teigen is back and not much has changed. She's on social media and she did this long ass post about how she's being cancelled and it's so depressing for her and she hates being at home and she misses her fans and she just wants to communicate with everybody again, aka like tweet and post on Instagram. Meanwhile, she was just in Italy, like on vacation a few days ago or like a week ago or something. And now she's saying that she's depressed at home. She looked like she was having a blast in Italy. Like she was having the time of her life. Now she's depressed suddenly. I tweeted this the other day and I said, she's literally so rich and hot and has a sexy husband and beautiful children. And what's making her depressed is not tweeting. She needs a therapist and some Jesus. I'm not even religious, but some people clearly have a hole in their life, a spiritual hole. She needs that filled with Jesus or something. Maybe she can become Muslim like Sinead O'Connor. I don't care. She needs to give it up to a higher power because she has all these incredible things in her life and she's depressed because she can't use social media. Like, that's very sick. And also, she's actually still on social media anyway, because she's been posting on Instagram for a while now. I'm not sure if she's still tweeting. I didn't check, but her posts on Instagram are still getting like 300, 500,000 likes a post. I just checked the other day and she was cooking on her Instagram stories and talking about how her dog died. Now, this is just one of two things. These are either orchestrated posts for sympathy, like the dead dog, and she's just trying to get back in favor with Hollywood because obviously she's lost a lot of big mainstream brand deals when she was canceled. So she's putting it out there that she's depressed and having a hard time because she wants the sympathy. Or maybe she's just sincere and she's completely addicted to social media and attention. Maybe it's a bit of both. She's not even, like, cancelled, okay? Because plenty of people still like her. Like, she still has a very large platform. Her life is basically perfect. Even with the cancellation, her life is still better than 99.9% of people. It's like, what are you even complaining about? I don't know. Like, if she wanted, she could literally just start a cooking show on her Instagram stories and it would get, like, a million views. Like, girl, you're fine and you'll probably bounce back in 6 months anyway. So whatever, she's so boring. I'm talking about her so much when I didn't even care about her when she was in like her prime, let alone now. The other psycho is Taylor Swift. So I was randomly on YouTube a week ago. I was researching stuff for my Spencer Pratt interview, and I found this clip of Taylor from some Netflix documentary that she did. Now, I'm sure you guys have all seen the doco. I have not. It came out a year or two ago. You know, I didn't watch it because I didn't care, but this clip just came up and was recommended to me, right? And in this clip, she's pacing around her house by herself with her cat and she's waiting for the Grammy nominations to come out. It's for her Reputation album. That was the one that she put out after Kim and Kanye tried to cancel her and everyone turned on her. So in this clip, she's like really anxious and her manager calls her and tells her that she isn't nominated in any of the major categories for a Grammy. And Taylor literally looks like she wants to kill herself. Like, I'm not even kidding. It's like her life is over. Her whole face changes. And then she's like, it's fine. It's fine. It's fine. This is good. I just need to make a better record. I'm making a better record. Like, really, like she just goes to 100. You can see the anxiety bursting out. She looks like a nut job. I think it's supposed to come off as really inspiring. It's supposed to come off like, oh, she was so unfairly snubbed. So then she came back and she worked harder and harder and girl bossed herself and then made a triumphant comeback. And no, she just looks like an insecure whack job that does everything for the charts and accolades, Which is like, okay, if you're Katy Perry or something, like, you know, you do you, like, get the awards. But it just makes someone like Taylor seem so super inauthentic, because she does present herself as, you know, a real artist. But a real artist isn't creating their art with the Grammy committee in mind. Like, sure, it's a nice bonus. It's nice to be recognized. It appeals to your ego. I think even the most kind of anti-mainstream indie artist probably deep down likes that recognition from the major awards on some level. But with Taylor, it came off like it's just her sole purpose. Like, that comes before anything else. And look, I'm not saying anything new. It's well known that Taylor Swift is completely calculated, and, you know, she's tried to rewrite that narrative about herself with various PR stunts, and she reframes all criticism about herself as some kind of sexist attack. But we all know the truth. I mean, most of us are not falling for that shit. Maybe if you're like 17, you'll buy into it, but the rest of us are like, you know, we see who you are. Maybe we still enjoy the music, but we get what you're about. And it's funny because that Reputation album specifically that, you know, she's upset about for not being nominated, like, it's not even a Grammy type of album. It's more of a statement piece to repair her public image after the Kim and Kanye feud. And it actually did work in that regard, because she took on her villainous, you know, image and made a whole thing about it. And she fixed her image and then came back to the mainstream like nothing happened. So if you judge it from that metric, that whole album and that whole era was a huge success, and it still sold like millions of copies. So no, you didn't get Grammy of the Year, but in every other conceivable way, this was a successful era for you. Then with her next album after Reputation, Lover, which I actually liked, by the way, because it had a lot of really cute romantic songs on it, but that album, she went all woke, which in retrospect, now I look at it, I'm like, oh, okay, you were just trying to appeal to the critics and the Grammys, because, you know, they do seem to prioritize that stuff over the actual quality of the music. Like, that album had that song, You Need to Calm Down, which had all the, you know, it had that cringy music video that was filled with all these, like, fat queer people and rainbow flags. And I think Ellen was in there and Jonathan Van Ness, and they're like the cancer of the LGBT community. So, of course, fucking Taylor Swift dragged them up and put them in a video. Then she had that feminist song, The Man, about how she's such a flop because she's a woman and, you know, she would be so much more successful if she was a man, even though she's literally the most successful artist, male or female, of this generation. Like, you could not get more accolades and success unless maybe Beyonce, but I think Taylor's even bigger than Beyonce. So that was just absurd that she even recorded that in the first place with a straight face and painted herself out like a victim as usual. And then the title track Lover, which, by the way, that's one of my favorite Taylor Swift songs. I absolutely loved that song. So romantic and sweet. But in the video, she has a black love interest, which again is funny because I don't think she's even had a black boyfriend in real life ever. So, you know, the guys that she actually dates, they look like World War II Nazis. Like, they're all blonde and blue-eyed. I googled her boyfriends. I did not see any diversity there. Maybe she's had one black guy tucked away. I don't think so, though. So, you know, she wheels it out for a music video, but in real life, I don't think you're, like, really living that. And oh my God, that era as well. She came out as all political and she started speaking out against like Trump or something. Very contrived. I actually watched another clip on YouTube. I guess it was from the same documentary. And Taylor's like crying and fighting with her management about how she has to speak out. And then she was like so smug about it. Like, she just cured cancer or something for fucking going on Instagram and telling people how to vote. Look, I would not take Taylor's political advice on anything. I would listen to Kim Kardashian over Taylor 100%. Like, at least Kim is boots on the ground making shit happen. And Kim actually hurt her own image by publicly meeting with Trump to discuss criminal justice reform. Like, she knew she was going to get backlash for that, and she still did it. Whereas Taylor's political moves are all calculated to improve her image. Like, there's no image risk. Of course, she tried to make out like, oh my God, I'm going to lose all my country fans if I do this. But it's like, you don't have any country. Like, you've been making like Katy Perry top 40 music for 6-7 years now or more. So I think that if she did have a conservative fan base originally, most of them are gone, so whatever. And then Taylor did that very boring folk album that, of course, swept the Grammys and got Album of the Year because it was such a Grammy album. It's like Taylor Swift doing these Twee Bon Iver remixes. Of course, that's going to win a Grammy. It's like, She knew that too. That's why she did it. I'm an artist. Like, that was that whole era. So it's just, I don't know. Why do people even care about Grammys and Oscars now? Like, these awards shows are totally obsolete. There are people on YouTube with more influence and power than somebody with 5 Grammys, but whatever. Enough about Tay-Tay. I was going to talk about Real Housewives of New York and Beverly Hills a bit, but I'll save that for next week. I'm recording next week's episode with Dan Allegretto, who's been on the podcast before, so I'll get into it with him and give you a break from Ebony and Roni for a week. Also, I've had several days of everyone calling me racist on Twitter for calling out Ebony, so that's been fun, hasn't it? I actually have most of the dumbass accounts that, like, do all that shit blocked anyway, so there hasn't been as much, like, trolling as I would usually get, so it's, you know, hasn't been as bad, but still kind of exhausting. Even people I used to be friends with are doing it. Like, these people are just fucking dumbasses, but I don't even care anymore. Someone, this guy that I used to be friends with like 10 years ago, responded to some tweet that I had about Ebony and was like, he's from Australia where, quote, racism doesn't exist. Like, I said that. And I'm like, yes, racism exists here. Like, big time, like the whole Aboriginal. Oh yeah, someone else responded to it like, I'm sure the Aboriginals would have a different opinion. And first of all, we don't even use the term Aboriginal anymore. It's like outdated and kind of racist. So look at you. We call them Indigenous or First Nations. And yeah, I mean, I'm clearly across, like, there was heaps of racism towards the Indigenous population here. I remember going as a child to the first Sorry Day with my parents, which is where the government apologized because of the Stolen Generation. Anyway, we're not getting into that, but just these stupid fucking tweets that I get all the time from these losers. It's just so tiring, but most of them are blocked, so whatever. By the way, I did drop a new Patreon episode a few days ago. I've got over 100 patrons now, which is amazing. I just want to shout out my latest patrons, that is Kerry, Lachlan, Shay, Sarah, Fran, and Elspeth. Elspeth, that's an interesting name. I like that. It sounds like a character from like a fantasy film. It's probably like a really common name in some other country and I don't know, and I sound like an idiot. Like when people think my name Jacques is exotic and it's like the most generic common name in France. Anyway, if you want to support me and the pod and get some bonus content too, you can sign up at www.patreon.com/unpopularjp. It's the same price as a cup of coffee. If you're strapped for cash but you still want to support me, please leave me a review on Apple and share the pod with people you know. That will really help me grow. So before I bring Elizabeth out, I just want to talk a little bit about the cult she was raised in and her background. We did discuss it a bit in our interview, but it's also a really sensitive subject for her because it was so traumatic. So, like, of course, out of respect, we didn't go into, you know, specific details or anything. This wasn't an Oprah sit down, so it wasn't really appropriate to do a deep dive, but we definitely touched on a few things. When she discussed it on The Real Housewives of OC, that was the first time she'd actually spoken about it really, like, on a large platform or in front of people. It was something that she kept secret. So she's actually still in a place of processing everything and healing. Less than a year ago, she actually couldn't even touch the subject without breaking down. Like, I've seen her in more than one interview start crying, just even, you know, like, even addressing it whatsoever. So, you know, she's still really going through it, still healing. I think a lot of people thought that maybe her backstory was fake or exaggerated because she did come off a bit like a bullshit artist on her season, but it's really not. It is hard to find articles on it, though, because her evil grandmother, who was the one that ran the whole cult, she had a few different churches and they had different names. And then there were all these other high profile Christian cults in Missouri that kind of overshadowed Elizabeth's, I think. There are also some articles that I think may be related to her grandmother, but I wasn't sure, so I'm not including those. So the cult that Elizabeth was in specifically was called Faith Bible Tabernacle. Her grandmother, Dorothy, ran it, and Elizabeth's father, David, was one of the main pastors. Dorothy also owned property and some various businesses that were ran by members of her different churches over the years. She was actually really wealthy and she lived in a huge house while everyone else in her cult, including Elizabeth, were dirt poor, living in trailers, So at Faith Bible Tabernacle, there was extreme abuse of children and animals. In our interview, Elizabeth actually shares briefly that animals were used in like religious rituals and sacrifices. The adults in the cult would speak in tongues and act like they were possessed by demons. That was a regular occurrence. A lot of the children were locked in closets and starved if they didn't behave. They were also beaten and abused sexually. Elizabeth has revealed in various interviews how she was abused from the age of 5 by multiple people for years, I think until she was 13, which is when her mother took Elizabeth and her siblings out and escaped. That was when they finally got out. Now, before Faith Bible Tabernacle, Elizabeth's grandmother, Dorothy, was actually running another cult called Full Gospel Christians. In 1976, Dorothy, her husband Harold, her son David, who is Elizabeth's father, and a couple of others were caught hiding a dead body in a tool shed for 3 months. The body turned out to be Dorothy's father, Otis, and they kept the body in the tool shed because they were doing rituals on it to try and bring it back to life. So that's how deranged these people were. Like, they believed in like voodoo pagan stuff, bringing dead bodies back to life. Demon possession, the whole thing. Obviously, if they're doing animal sacrifices, this is like really far out pagan stuff. Around the same time, this group also got arrested for kidnapping a 17-year-old boy. He was staying at the commune where the cult was, and he didn't want to go along with whatever shit they were doing at the time, so they handcuffed him in a barn. He managed to escape and run to a neighbor's for help, where he called the police and reported what happened. So you have an idea of what kind of people Elizabeth grew up around, and after you hear our interview, you'll understand her better, I think, and probably, not that people didn't have empathy for her before, they did, but I just think people didn't get the full picture of it. And then, of course, the cult aside, Elizabeth was going through a divorce with her ex-husband, who was a Norwegian multimillionaire, and she was on gag orders and she couldn't talk about a lot of stuff. So I think that explains why Elizabeth came off as she did during her season. So let's get into it. Thanks, guys. Okay, guys, I have a very underrated OC housewife on the pod today. She was one of my faves from last season. Please welcome the very fun and bubbly Elizabeth Vargas.
Well, hello.
How are you?
Hello from Washington State. I'm good. Thank you.
I'm really bummed that you were not back on the OC, because I just feel like you did not get a fair shot at all. It's not like you even got to be judged properly, as every other housewife is. Like, you were in the COVID season and everything. I mean, do you feel a bit cheated?
You know, that is an open question. You know, it was first off, the whole year was weird. We had Kobe Bryant to start with, you know, that unfortunate situation. Then we had an election year. Then COVID hit. And in the midst of all of this chaos, I was going to trial for my divorce. So, yes, the 2020 year was not my year. So I'm certainly glad it was over. And yes, I do feel like I was snuffed a little bit by the entire year, but it is what it is.
You're handling it really well, because I follow you on Instagram, and you're always so happy and you always just have like such a fun demeanor and everything. And you've been so open about it too, which I love, because so many housewives are not open about not being asked back on the show, and you're just like putting it all out there, which is nice to see.
Yeah, that was a very polite way to put it. Not being asked back or putting fire. But yes, thank you.
What was your second season storyline going to be? Because you must have been thinking about it, because obviously, you know, you're preparing to come back and everything. Like, what were you planning to give us? What were you thinking about?
Interestingly enough, I felt like the 2020 season was so dark and so deep that I thought some things were exposed I wasn't expecting. And I thought, you know, 2021 is going to give me the opportunity to really showcase survival mode. And instead of, you know, the victim mode of, you know, all that stuff, you know, kind of showing where you can go through so much in life and look where I am today and look what I can create. So I make my money the old-fashioned way, your opening line or whatever. It says getting it, then making more, whatever. Making more part was my next storyline, which was, what can I do? How can I take what I've made from my divorce? How can I take from what I've learned from 2020 and morph it into 2021 for the positive and for my We Care Rescue Ranch, which would have been awesome. My vodka, which helped save the animals. And it was just going to be this great trifecta of a TV show, positive energy with the housewives and the animals and the vodka. But it didn't happen. So, you know, hey, I had to go a different direction.
What are some of the things that you would have been able to talk about, you know, on a new season? Because there was a lot that you weren't allowed to say because you were in all the legal stuff last time. Like, what would have you been able to share with us if you would, you know, come back?
You know, I was so ready to just explode on the show this next season because I had this huge gag order and this cloud over my head and all these orders coming at me. And now I'm single, ready to mingle. I'm divorced. I'm out there. I'm more confident and I can speak my mind and let the world know what happened through my divorce, what I went through, what he did to me. I don't have any gag orders. There's no lawsuits pending. There's no trial. I'm much more, my demeanor is much more ready to be open and willing. And I would have been able to talk about all of it. And so it's very unfortunate, but I guess it all happens for a reason.
Yeah, well, I have noticed for sure that in your interviews, like press interviews that you've done, I've heard you on like different podcasts and stuff, you're a lot more open than you were able to be on the show. Like it's very different because you did have to be more guarded on the show. Coming into the OC, how is it different to what you thought it would be? Like, is it really like what people say that it's like going into Survivor or a chess game or something? Like there's all these things happening that you don't expect.
It's not that. It's going into a shark tank and not having a cage. You're basically just like dipped in and ready for chocolate to cover you and you can just get shit on.
Well, you really had Bronwyn come after you into, like, I remember during the season, she was like investigating your finances or something. And then you just said on another podcast that she was conspiring with your ex-husband at the reunion.
Yeah.
Can you tell that? Because this is crazy. Like, this is like a plot against you.
Oh, 100%. But keep in mind, you know, those who love to hate because of envy. And unfortunately, I was the one she picked that to hate. And so, you know, I guess maybe I was the easiest target that year. And so, yes, she, you know, during the whole season, I couldn't figure out why my ex-husband was sending me these orders in my divorce and where he was getting the information from. So I had actually contacted Evolution and said, you have a mole. I have a text from my ex stating, I have somebody, FYI, this is a mean text. I have somebody very close to you in production that's telling me everything you're saying. And I'm like, I'm thinking, okay, Emily doesn't know him. No one knows him. I thought, okay, so I watched the camera crew. I'm like, who? I even researched the camera crew. Who knows my ex-husband? It was Bronwyn the whole time. She had researched him, stalked him online, found out how to get a hold of him, contacted him, and then just befriended him. And I don't know what else to do with him. I don't even want to know. He loves famous people. And I mean, whatever. They're like two peas in a pod. Yeah. And she got to know him and apparently got some scoop on me the entire season. I'm trying to befriend this woman who I have compassion for because, you know, my sister is homeless and an addict and she doesn't know how to pay her bills. She doesn't know anything. So I could relate to Bronwyn being an addict and being, you know, I couldn't help my sister, but I thought I could help this woman. Even off the show, I thought, you know, all these other women hate her, but I don't know her, so I'm going to give her a chance. So to know she was conspiring through the season, you know, against me to try and be famous using me, pissed me off to no end. So in the reunion, you see me explode. Because I just found out that she had hooked up with my ex-husband.
Oh, and okay.
You gotta. And then I couldn't even hold it in. My demeanor just went psycho. Well, and I was like, you fucking whore. I went off. I went off and they only showed part of it. So, so needless to say, it was an interesting end of the season. And I am certainly glad that she was released along with me, because it made me feel a little bit better, even though it shouldn't have. It did.
Well, you've taken it a lot better than she has, I think, and judging by her interviews. And it is funny that she sort of was digging into your finances. And then I just saw like 2 days ago on the Daily Mail that she was owes like all this money in back rent and all this stuff's coming out. And it's just interesting. It's like she points the finger at you, and then it's like, look at everything that's come out about her now.
Well, I think that you probably understand this by meeting people in your life, that when someone points a finger at you and blames you for something or accuses you of something, it's probably because they're that person that they love to hate. And she was absolutely opposite of me. I own everything I say I own. I have documents. You can look at all the deeds to all of my houses. I own all of them. I own all my, you know, everything I say I own, I own. I don't like to sit there and brag about, oh, Bronwyn, let me, here's my deed. Oh, I paid off, my Bentley's paid off. Here's my title. Like, it's inappropriate. And so I knew she was massively in debt, especially in Florida. They got tons of issues there that they escaped from. Now they're here, and now they got problems here too. So they just kind of bounce around. And I didn't expose that on the show. I didn't sit there and go, Bronwyn, by the way, you should probably talk to your, I can't say anything, but anyway, I don't want to say anything about
talk to your husband.
Yeah, we had issues, and I didn't want to say anything about her family and her kids, what they were going through. And so for her to really do that to me hurt me to the core, because I didn't realize what women would actually go, what link they would go to be on that show. And it was disappointing, to say the least.
And she's someone that you bonded with on the show, because we saw you had that really powerful moment when you opened up to her about your upbringing. And so you like shared things with her, and then, I don't know, it's just such a betrayal.
That was all set up.
Oh, really?
Kidding me.
From set up from her, or set up from you, or
I'm
set up?
Never going to share anything with her. Absolutely never. See, and that's another thing about the show. I didn't even know her, but I knew. See, they didn't show what led up to that trail. And I have a great instinct. Growing up how I did, I have an extremely good instinct, and I know how to understand a room and people. And so I knew she had found out something. I didn't know from who. I didn't know she was the mole at this time.
Oh.
But passed. So when the producers were putting us together, I couldn't figure out what, like, oh, you have so much in common. I'm like, what? This girl is a psych. Like, she's what? I'm not anywhere near like this woman, but I want to help her. And so I didn't understand what the producers were trying to do. And then when that day came, and, you know, we're up in the mountains, and then they put her on a trail with me, they actually asked us to go by ourselves. And I'm like, that was weird. I was not expecting it. Leading up to that moment, I knew something was happening, and I knew they were trying to get me to say something, and she was going to be the one that saves Elizabeth. And so the fact that that happened, and then the whole world thought she saved me that day, was such a joke to me that I just couldn't believe they produced it like that. Because I didn't even know her, and she didn't actually care. In fact, she didn't even reach out to me after we were done filming.
I think you said that at the reunion or something along those lines. And yeah, we could see how angry you were at the reunion.
It was so fake. She didn't even go, Elizabeth, oh my gosh, I didn't even know. Is everything okay? Emily, Gina, Shannon, Kelly all reached out to me, and they were genuinely like concerned, which I don't want sympathy. I didn't even want it to come out. And so the fact that Bronwyn used this for her fame just hurt me to the core, and it's unforgivable. And so I've been trying in my heart to forgive her for her actions, and for her now knowing she was, you know, in bed with my ex-husband verbally or via text or via phone or via anything else. I have no idea. Allegedly, you know,
allegedly,
you know, whatever she was doing with my ex-husband, knowing that they were together and meeting and talking about me, really, and I was trying to help her, made me realize, you know, that I am who I am, and I am who I say I am, and I'm true to myself. And if someone like her doesn't believe me or tries to discredit me because they're discredited themselves, that is not my problem. And I just have to take that with a grain of salt, move it over here, compartmentalize it and say, don't hang out with those people. So when I got axed for the second season, because I've been dreading working with her another season, I literally had anxiety. So when I found out I was axed and then she was axed, I was relieved that I was axed. It was the weirdest feeling. I was very sad. But I was like, oh, well, now I don't have to work with Bronwyn because I would never choose to hang out with those people, those type of people in my life. And I liked her and I don't. And so then all of a sudden, you know, Kelly was axed and I was like, well, this is, I guess we all, woohoo! I get hired when the two OGs of the OC were fired. And then I get fired when the other two crazy ladies got fired too. So I guess I made my impact.
Well, you know, the other thing I think that was a big part of the season was, and I wanted to get your thoughts on this about how politicized the season was. And it was sort of like the audience did it, which I was really outspoken against it because I thought it was ridiculous. And then Bronwyn as well. And I think you even said in an interview that you're not even a political person. And then it's like, I remember that interview where Bronwyn came out and she was like, I don't know, she basically said everyone is conservative and they don't support Black lives and LGBT, only I do and I can't relate to anyone. And that was really at the start of the season too, before people figured out Bronwyn's true colors. So you guys got like a lot of hate. Like, what was that like? Because that's got to be scary, and especially today's climate with the cancel culture and everything.
100%. One thing about this cast is a lot of us, all of us, give back to our community. Shannon gives back. Emily certainly gives back. Kelly gives back all the time, but we don't have to advertise it. I'll donate to the women and children's shelters. I donate all of my clothes. I donate, I give money. I do everything. I don't post it because I don't have to. And frankly, I don't think you need credit every time you help someone. You shouldn't expect praise. So when Bronwyn said that, we were all, and we all talk, and we were all like, well, wait a minute. We all give back to our communities. How could this one person be telling the world that we are selfish conservatives when, by the way, if she knew how any of us voted, she wouldn't be saying that. So it's kind of like, obviously she doesn't know us or she wouldn't have said that. And so to have her give us a voice without us giving ourselves a voice was disappointing, not only for us knowing Bronwyn, but for the audience, because then the audience had this preconceived notion of us being these horrible, whatever, are we red people, you know? And so, I mean, it's like, come on, you know, stop it. And so I was disappointed and I was sad that audience listened to her so much that they just believed her. And then I'm certainly absolutely glad that, you know, with every evil individual, the truth will always come out. I mean, you've seen every single movie. The bad guy always gets caught or gets, you know, outed. And this is what happened here. And I think it should have happened. And I'm glad that the audience had a voice and Bravo fixed the issue.
Yeah, the whole thing was just bizarre because it's like, back in the day, you didn't ask people like who they voted for and everything. You just kind of like judged them on who they are. And then we had, especially with your season, like it like peaked. It was an obsession with everyone's politics. And it was, I just thought it was insane.
It was crazy. I mean, think about it. You know, I wasn't used to it. I was like, this is crazy about all this, you know. And then Andy Cohen, you know, can't stand Kelly because she's, you know, Kelly and she's with a Fox News guy. That shouldn't have even mattered. We're on a show about drunk women and Spanx drinking tequila under the bar. We're not on a show about let's make a difference on the housewives. I'm sorry, but when I watch TV, I want to get out of my head. I don't want to get back in it and crawl in a hole. And that's what happened to this season. And I'm certainly glad that they revamped the cast and they're redoing everything because they needed to or it would have tanked.
Yeah, well, it's not The View, so I'm glad that they're getting back to the Housewives roots. And I only have one last Bronwyn question, and this is the one that I've wanted to know the most, and actually a lot of people message me about this. We all want to know about your almost hookup with Bronwyn, because they brought that up at the reunion, and then it was like glossed over, and we're like, hang on, wait, did I wanted a, I was hoping in my... I wanted the lesbian Bronwyn and Elizabeth romance for season 2. I was into it.
Well, you know, I'm really not into women with seven kids, but I think what happened was I wasn't even on the show yet. In fact, she didn't even know I had the show. And I can't remember if I had already gotten the show, but I didn't tell anybody. Told me not to tell anybody. So I hung out with her a couple times because, you know, the housewives, they tend to hang out with who they think is going to be on it. They try to cling on to friends. You know, it's like this big Game of Thrones. And we went out one night. She was wasted drunk, as usual. And her husband was like, we need to get her home. And I said, yeah, you should probably take her home. And I was sober. We were dancing at this club in Laguna. I think it was Laguna. And all of her other friends were there. And then all of a sudden she leans over and tries to stick her tongue down my throat. And I'm like, and first off, I mean, I didn't mind it, but she's not my type at all. So, I mean, if she was my type, I might have went for it. There was another woman there. Anyway, so I was shocked because her husband was standing right there, and I'm not into swingers at all. I don't like watchers. You know, I'm sorry, but not into it. So I kind of like pushed her away, and then she like came back, and then I'm like, should I be flattered? Because I'd never watched The Housewives. I don't even know who this woman is. I just know she's on the show, and I knew I was going to be on the show. I didn't really do the research that she was this lesbian. So, and long story short, she went away. So then she did it a couple of times. She's like flirting with me. And I just denied her. Well, then she hated me the whole season. I'm like, rejection sucks, bitch. Get used to it.
That makes sense.
I love brunettes anyway. So there you go.
So on a more serious note, so on the show, like, you were really open about your upbringing, and obviously that's really difficult to talk about, but do you feel like being on the show actually helped you like face these things that you had maybe, you know, not wanted to face in, you know, your real life?
Absolutely. You know, that was extremely difficult to know that I had never spoken about it to my peers ever. On a personal level, in person, and not to mention on an international syndicated television show. So I was very grief-stricken when that came out, and I was petrified. And after it came out, I spent about a month hiding. I didn't want to leave my house. I didn't know what to do, actually. I thought everyone's going to look at me weird and I'm going to be this broken woman. But what ended up happening was the opposite. I got a lot of love and a lot of just coming out and telling people who I really was. I didn't think mattered, but it mattered to a lot of people that were also hurting. So to answer your question, it actually helped me in the long run, because to be able to share my story and help one person was amazing. And I didn't realize I helped so many. So I got loads of love on Instagram, and these stories were heart wrenching. And I read every single one of them, and I'm like, oh my God, this is, I guess, a good thing. So here we go.
Have you been, like, since the show, obviously, and then it brought things up, and, you know, I've seen you in, like, I saw you on the Juicy Scoop interview and some other ones. I know that even having to discuss it, like, you know, you break down. And have you been doing, like, you know, therapy or anything? Or have you been, like, because you seem to have, to me, like, it's like a, you know, PTSD.
You know, I didn't realize that it was PTSD. I live my life very compartmentalized in a shell. That's why I created that bubble in Orange County. So I could just compartmentalize the I start stuttering. I don't know why. It's the weirdest thing. The dysfunction of my past, I compartmentalize it, but I've been going to this therapist whom the housewives actually found for me. And she's a real therapist, not a fake one. She's an actual therapist that's been helping me work through this trauma, which I never knew I needed. So it's turned out to be where I can talk about it. Like today, I can talk about it to you, and maybe I stutter a little bit, but I don't break down. I've accepted who I am now. I've accepted that all my peers know that have watched it. The only thing that I'm a little bit weary about is Jimmy and I broke up, and I'm just too much of a handful for him, too much everything. And so he has Mika now, my rescue dog, and he went on, but now I'm single, ready to mingle. And I'm just concerned that I'm not going to be able to meet a normal guy because, you know, they know my history now and everyone talks about it. And, you know, and then I'm like, okay, I don't know how to meet somebody.
Everybody has kind of baggage in their past. Like, we all feel like we're alone, and then you open up and it's like everyone has some kind of story of either it happened to them or it happened to someone close to them, and we all kind of have that baggage. I think there's more baggage just you having done reality TV than that's anything that's happened. Like, just that you were on that Housewives is going to be a red flag. Like, I don't think anything that you've been through. And, you know, it's funny, like, when you were on the show, you did get a lot of criticism in that people felt like you kind of weren't open about things and you dodged questions, you bragged about money. And then if they actually understand your story and where you came from, like growing up, you know, poor in the cult and everything you've been through, I think they would understand why you were how you were on the show, like a lot more.
Keep in mind, the money thing was pushed by the producers. So I would never, ever, ever sit there and go, I mean, they asked me, how much money are you making? How much money are you getting? You need to tell us this. You need to, because nobody really on the show had a lot of money. And I was one of the only ones that had anything. And so it was kind of like they wanted to exploit that. And they wanted, you know, they were able to film at my house during COVID because I owned it. And all I had to do was sign it. Everyone else was renting. So it was kind of like, I think Emily owns her house though. But, you know, and so, you know, they wanted to show me and all this stuff, but, you know, it was uncomfortable for me. So I understand why a lot of people were like, she's a gold digging, she's materialistic, you know, she doesn't talk a lot, her story doesn't make sense. I agree. I was a disaster. I had gag orders. I was trying to be something I wasn't on the show. I was trying to exploit material items that meant nothing to me. I was trying to make them mean something. You know, frankly, I was a whole new woman after my divorce, and I didn't want to brag about my crap. But I was trying to be a housewife, and I thought that's what you had to do. So I'm certainly understandable. I'm certainly understanding of the audience thinking of that way. And I don't blame them whatsoever. I just am excited to move on from that.
You know, when I listened to your Juicy Scoop interview and you were talking about your marriage, and your marriage sounded just kind of insane, because it's like you didn't know he was married at first, and then he had all of these other women, and it was this like wild lifestyle. And then I almost thought, like, but from what you came from growing up, even though it would be weird to some people, you probably just accepted a lot of like dysfunction in your marriage and everything, because you're used to dysfunction, and that dysfunction's better than the dysfunction that you came from. So it was probably a good trade up.
Nice analysis. It's absolutely true. And I did not know that till I started seeing therapists, that the reason I was chosen by my ex was because I was able to handle the dysfunction, because to me it was better than the dysfunction of being a jazz singer, working in a restaurant, broke, with no money, not being able to pay my rent. And I couldn't go home because that was dysfunctional. He was the best option. And then it just morphed into this dysfunctional relationship, which then morphed into a dysfunctional marriage. And that's how my childhood was. So it was just comfortable for me until I got older and realized it's just way too dysfunctional. I got to get out. Everyone's like, why are you divorcing? You have everything. I'm like, I have everything but my sanity.
You know what? This is probably the first time in your life that you're actually leading a normal life, because it's from the childhood in the cult to the crazy marriage to being on the Real Housewives of Orange County and COVID and everything. And now it's like, this is probably like literally the first time in your life that things are kind of like normal, right?
This is funny you say this. Today, literally today, I'm up here in Washington. There's deer, there's trees, there's mountains, there's a lake. My family's here. I told myself, wow, I'm free of chains right now. I could go anywhere, do anything, see and meet anybody I want. And I thought, and there was a sense of calm today. And I had all these interviews today, and I'm like, I'm just going to set it up by my fireplace. I don't care if it works out, it works out. I'm going to go, you know, take my dog for a walk later and maybe run into a bobcat. That would be awesome. You know, and I could go eat, you know, pizza, or go play. I could do whatever I wanted, or I could, you know, and so today I was sitting there going, you're right. Like, I'm literally this week, I came up here to reboot because I was picked up by a new network right after I was released out of my contract. So I said, I need a reboot and rethink who Elizabeth is so that when I go on to this new network and I have 200 million daily viewers, this network, so I'm very excited about it, I can really showcase the positivity of how you can be smashed, ran over, kicked, and move forward. So I'm just calm. Even my therapist said I'm calm, and I don't know why. I just am. I'm very happy.
Yeah, you look happy. And although you always look happy because you just have that, you're always like smiling and laughing, and
true,
you always seem to be.
Real, by the way, because I take life as a journey of laughter versus a journey of negativity. So
yeah, you know, you said I think you told Page Six in January that you had received some like DMs from, you know, people that had been in the cult that you had grown up with. Have you been in touch with anybody yet, or is it sort of something that you've put aside for now?
No, it's sort of a cloud still over my mind. You know, I didn't go on to expose my family on my dad's side. It's not my mom's side, it's my dad's side. And they were very unhappy. I don't blame them. But, you know, they left the cult and started telling everybody that they were in this religious, amazing environment. They didn't speak their truth. So when people found out, when I came out and said, no, it was an abusive, you know, people are dead cult, you know, like this is an awful environment for children. They were shocked. And so, some of them DM me on Instagram and they're still upset and there's nothing I can do about it because they never lived my story. I did. And if I choose to tell my story when I told my story, then that was my choice. And if they can't accept it, then they maybe need to go to therapy, or get help themselves, because it is a traumatizing experience and I would never wish it upon anybody ever.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm not going into details or anything, but I just want to let the listeners know that, yeah, what was on the Housewives of Orange County only scratched the surface because, you know, there are articles online and everything, and this was really, really horrible. I don't think people even watching even understand a fraction of what you and what other people in that cult went through. And I was wondering, like, did you watch the Paris Hilton documentary about her at the boarding school?
No, but I want to so bad.
Well, that hers is like a walk in the park compared to your past. And I was thinking, like, with your show, would you ever do like a documentary or write a book or something about this? Because like what Paris did in her documentary, and I thought it was kind of really amazing, is that she exposed the school and she went back and she talked to people that had been at this, you know, abusive boarding school as well, and they got their stories out. And I know you're working on a new show, and I feel like that's the show, because that's real. That's something that needs to be out there that people need to know about. Like, that's going to make a huge difference in so many people's lives and shed light on something. Like, I mean, yeah, have you thought about that at all?
You know, I have. I just feel that I'm still healing from the exposure of last year. And I think it's probably going to take me a good year or so to feel comfortable again in my own skin. I'm still, even right now, feeling, you know, we're talking about it and I get it. And it's interesting, since I was a little girl and I was able to escape from the cult with my mother, she luckily got us out of there. I realized that I was going to live my life to create happiness. All I wanted to do was Give Peace a Chance. I watched that music. And so I had a music company because I watched Give Peace a Chance. All we are saying, give peace a chance. Okay, so I saw, I'm like, oh my God, music creates happiness. And I was a jazz singer because I thought, if I sing, I can make people happy. If I sing a jazz song, look at this couple, they're smiling. So my whole life's been to create happiness. And so I've always said, I'm going to expose this eventually to the world to help other little girls or other little boys or kids to get through if they're going through a hard time. Just hearing my story and they went through it, it's okay. And so I didn't know how it was going to come out. So to have the Housewives have it exposed was a step in the right direction, which I wasn't planning on, especially on the Housewives, whatever. But then I said, okay, this next show, you know, I talked to the producers and we're going to, you know, the show is going to be about some of the most influential individuals in the world. And I'm going to lead this wonderful show to expose them. And then they're going to do a show on me, they said, after like the third or fourth show. And I'm a little nervous about it. But to answer your question, yes, I do believe a documentary on what I went through. The church is no longer there. In fact, they just bulldozed it, I believe, last year. So my brother had gone there and got all my schoolwork and all of our stuff was still there in the basement of this church. Oh. It was creepy. He's got pictures of everything. I mean, even the closets that they locked us in and all the other weird shit. I mean, it was all, I could never go back. I don't know how he did it. He's traumatized. My brother, Jonathan, I'm very thankful he did that because it gives me closure. But you know, it should be exposed on a show one day. And I think when the time is right, it will be. Because when I saw people on my Instagram reaching out to me in tears, it was, I have to tell you, hon, it was insane. I read every story and I was crying for days, but it was so healing. I was like, oh my God, I'm not alone. Wait, there's other people that are getting abused like this? Wow.
Yeah, I think honestly, when the time's right, whenever that is, definitely look into that, either a book or a documentary series or something, because I just think it would help so many people. I think it would help you. Watch the Paris Hilton one, because you'll see.
I absolutely will.
Yeah, what she did and how she did it. And what I love now in terms of you talking about positivity is the rescue ranch, which you could even put that in the documentary because animals are healing, you know, like especially with trauma and everything. Can you tell me a bit about the rescue ranch?
Yes, absolutely. Animals have always been part of my soul. And growing up, I saw them abused in the church and my grandmother abused them. And I couldn't believe what I saw, how they abused the animals, and there was altars and they would burn things and I can't get into it, but
yeah.
And so I always said, I'm going to help animals no matter what. And so having this rescue ranch, I'm finally divorced and I have some money in the bank. And I said to myself, this is my time to help what I can help. My ex-husband never wanted to do any of this. And I was begging him, we have all this money, let's do something. And so now I'm like, I can do it. So I formed a We Care brand, and We Care doesn't just necessarily mean animals. It was, I was sleeping one night. I woke up at 4 a.m. with this brand called We Care. And I'm like, because it's not just me that cares. People with money care too. So if I can get the people that money that care to give it to me, I can then care, and it's We Care. So I came up with this brand and then I thought We Care Rescue Ranch, and it was all available. The domains the next day. I woke up that morning and just the domain was available. I bought the domain. I bought the everything We Care. And I was like, I can't believe this is, how is We Care available? So trademark, everything. And the We Care Rescue Ranch was something that I could start to help animals. And then COVID hit right away. So I realized if I donate and I help animals by just donating and finding out what needs help out there during COVID, that when after COVID, I could then solidify our direction and then start helping from there. And lo and behold, right after COVID is semi-lifted, we get 501c3 certified. It took me 2 years. I couldn't believe it. I was like, what? And then I get my first donation from the Peace, Love, and Happiness Foundation from Eloise DeJoria and Jean-Paul DeJoria. So we are now off and running, and we are looking to start with spay and neuter to help eliminate the overpopulation of young animals. And then in 10 years, those animals that would have overpopulated won't overpopulate, and we should have about a 10-year flat line of random animals running around everywhere if we can get it affordable to those who can't afford it. So I'm very excited. We're going to help rescue animals and send them to the rescues that already are available and up and running. And we're going to donate to those, not a lot, but some of those that we see that are really working and that are helping to rehabilitate these animals for adoption. So I'm very excited. It's just something very cool.
Oh, that's amazing. And I know that you've got the vodka line as well. And some of the money from the vodka goes to to We Care, right?
Well, that's why I did it. So, I mean, okay. So here's my thought on the vodka. Everyone was getting drunk during COVID. I was getting divorced. I had to shut down my music company. What business would you start? An alcohol company. Okay. The numbers were going up. They weren't going down. That's for sure. So I launched it on 12/20/2020. It took us a year to find the formula for the vodka. It is 7 times distilled, pure grain gluten-free vodka. I mean, it is organic from the core. John Paul DeJoria, who sold Patron Tequila for $5.2 billion 2 years ago, is my partner. I pitched him. He said yes. He doesn't drink vodka, but he agreed to our brand. He loved it. So I licensed Vargas Vodka, the name, my name, Vargas. I didn't even think my name would be, but I couldn't trademark anything else. And I tried this one and it worked. And I'm like, fuck it. Guess it's going to be my name. A Mexican vodka. So we launched it on 12/20/2020, and we've had an unbelievable response. And every single bottle, a percentage, my partners donate a percentage to WeCare. And then I also donate a dollar every bottle to WeCare. So we're going to have the website up where it shows every bottle and it shows how much money we're earning for all the rest of the animals. And it's a cool synergy. So the show that I'm also got picked up on, a percentage of that revenue is also going to WeCare. I made sure of it. So I'm,
oh, that's great.
Yeah. So everything I do is going to go towards the animals. So I'm very excited.
Yeah. And I saw on the Instagram that you're getting you've got the vodka in a bunch of retailers in like California and liquor stores and bars and stuff that. And how has life changed for you now since you've got the divorce wrapped up? Are you still jet setting around everywhere? Or are you more frugal these days? Are you penny pinching?
Okay. I definitely lost my jets and my helicopters and my, you know, staying at the, you know, Waldorf or Lanesboro in London. Okay. Thank you, Bear. I appreciate it. Not my life anymore. but I'm definitely frugal with my own money now. I could do that, but I like longevity as far as your financial stability. So I bought a couple houses. I've invested a lot. I use Wells Fargo Advisors, Alan Schreiber, as my financial advisor. So he is really keeping me steady, making sure I gain wealth versus just spend it all. I sold, like I told everybody last season, I told Gina I was selling my Ferrari, using it for a year, and going to sell it as soon as I got my certification for WeCare. No one believed me. I sold my Ferrari 2 weeks ago, right when I got home. And I gave the proceeds to WeCare. So I don't need all that kind of stuff. I just need to be able to restructure, move forward. And all of this stuff doesn't mean anything to me. It's just drama. I just want to focus on what matters the most, and that's helping my animals and others. And I'm very, very happy with my decision.
What kind of guy are you after?
Oh my gosh. Well, I'm a horn dog. No, just kidding. I know. You know, I'm after, you know, I don't need anything as far as thing. I need a kind, preferably someone that can cook. I want someone who enjoys time with someone versus what someone can offer. I want someone that just, you know, I just want a kind person that's fun and kind, preferably a little taller. Because I'm a larger woman, I'm like tall and I'm bigger, you know, juicy.
Your priorities must have changed a lot. Because I guess when you met your husband, it was more like, obviously, you know, the wealth and everything would have been appealing. And now you're like set up in life. So you probably, it's completely different what you're looking for.
Well, right now I wouldn't mind like six guys with a bunch of fans on me and me just martinis. I mean, just for a year. Give me a year of some pool boys, okay?
Well, I mean, it's time for you to, I think, have a sing. You haven't really been single for, probably single for God knows how long. So enjoy it.
At the end of the month with my girlfriend.
Oh, that'll be fun.
We're going to go to Europe and we're going to lay some ground rules.
And I was wondering, are you watching The Housewives of Beverly Hills at all? Are you like, because obviously you would have seen in the news, of course, Erica Jane divorcing Tom Girardi and everything she's going through. Mm-hmm. As someone yourself that has married an older, wealthy man and then had to divorce him and it was a nightmare, do you have any advice for Erica?
Just stick with your non-balls, your little girl balls, and don't listen to anyone else. And I'm telling you what, girl, I believe when you say you didn't know what the fuck he was doing. Because I've been in a situation where the money was misappropriated. You don't know where that money's going. You don't even know where you're getting the money from. It just, you get it. You don't ask questions. and yet enjoy your life. And I was in that situation. Completely understand her. And I wish I knew her, because I would hug her and tell her, you know, coming from nothing, getting something, you're engulfed in this weird world of money. You don't ask questions. There, like she said, her husband's proud. So is mine. And when you find out what really goes on behind the scenes, you're like, you gotta be kidding. I mean, that's why I had so many gag orders. She's fucked, because she's really famous and I wasn't. So I'm just thankful I was not famous, because they would have dug into his history and it wouldn't have been good. So I think I just feel for her. And now I don't feel for her completely, because, you know, she had a great life and now she's got to live normal. Hello, welcome to the club, honey. But you know, what's normal to us is not normal in general. So I don't really feel sorry for her.
Well, you and Erica had, like, you do have very similar stories, because, I mean, and you were a jazz singer and then you met this older wealthy man and she was like she was a waitress slash, you know, aspiring performer. And then, so it's like you had really similar stories.
Well, I sang Big Spender to mine. And that's how
Was that a plan? Were you waiting for the rich guy to come in and you were going to sing it?
I always loved the rich man, don't get me wrong. But, you know, someone buy me a meal, come on. I don't want to work at a restaurant forever. But, you know, I couldn't afford college and I ended up putting myself through school. And I was working three jobs to put myself through school. So when I met my ex, it was like, wow, this is so cool. You know, I have someone who's buying me a meal and super kind, and he was gorgeous, you know? And so, you know, it was worth it. But you know, it turned into dysfunction, but, you know, isn't everything.
Was that fish out of water at first? Because obviously you weren't from money. Was it like, did you have to like learn the social etiquette and everything?
Oh, you have no idea. He was embarrassed to take me around into these, like, when we finally solidified our relationship, he was like, well, I can't take you to board meetings because I don't know if you're going to act right. And I'm like, I wasn't a prostitute, asshole. Like, I was a freaking waitress. I can learn.
You do have a huge personality, though. Like, I imagine that a lot of these wealthy guys, they want more of the, like, wallflower, like the arm candy that's not going to be loud and speak up and everything, whereas you're the complete opposite.
Well, no, I play a good wallflower. Oh. I play a good one on TV. But I can be quiet when I have to. But I was always, he would always have me sing to all of the bankers, all of the board members in every country. He would literally have me in a bar and go, she's singing, and put me in front of a piano. And I would sing for all of it. I would blow them all away. And I have a decent voice and I sound, you know, it's very sultry, and the men just die. They're like, oh my God. And so it was kind of one of those moments where he was proud of me on a regular basis for being a singer. And I was saying to him, you know, I'd change it from my heart belongs to, you know, have you heard the heart? My heart belongs to daddy.
Wow. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
A game of golf. Okay. So I would sing that all the time. I love. And so, you know, I made him proud and it was fun. I got to be loud on stage and then quiet, you know, during the meetings. And I was very appropriate. But yes, I did have to learn when to talk, when not to talk, how to walk, how to dress. He took me to St. John. I had a pretty woman moment. Spent thousands, tens of thousands of dollars. It was amazing. We go to New York and I don't really dress well. I don't have, you know, I've got like these Forever 21 outfits. You know, you're like, come on, you're a billionaire. Like, come on, do something. At the time though, he's only a millionaire. And so he brought me in there and he told the St. John people, he said, and I had, you know, he's like, take care of her, get her anything she needs, and everything needs to be tailored exactly to her body, exactly to fit perfect. I was like, so $45,000 later, I'm like, holy crap. And they were like kissing my ass, bringing me champagne. I'm like, where's my hat? Where's Pretty Woman? Is she coming for any minute?
It is funny though, how you do dress, like you do dress normal. And I always say that the people that actually have money, like they dress normal, like they're not covered in, they're not dressed like Dorit, you know, like people that, you know, you're not dressed in like a logo from head to toe. It's like more low key.
Well, it's, you know, you learn that when you start gaining your wealth that you're a target and you don't want, if you're going to walk around, talk about it. Like, that's why I was annoyed with the housewives, because when you talk about it, you're just a target. people are just going to ask you for money all day long. I don't want to be asked for money all day long. I don't want to be told, you know, I don't want people to rob me. I don't want any of that, you know? And yeah, I show stuff, but I don't, you know, I don't run around. I actually barely wear jewelry. I barely wear makeup, you know? And so I think you just learn to adapt and adopt a calmer personality when you start having that money, because you just learn that's not really the best way to live. Like having that Ferrari showcased was really embarrassing, but I did it because, you know, they wanted to do it and I did it. So, you know, it was what it was. So,
yeah. Well, look, thank you so much for coming on the pod. I think this was so fun. I think you are a very underrated housewife, and I really do think that you had a lot more to give. And by the way, I really liked that season. I'm actually a big defender of that season. I know a lot of people hated it. I always say that I loved it because I found it actually more authentic than a lot of the other housewife shows, because I felt like COVID separating everyone, we were seeing real stuff. Like, it doesn't get much realer than, you know, you revealing being in a cult and getting a divorce, and then what Gina was going through with her ex-husband. God. And yeah, and then Bronwyn, like, everyone was going through like real heavy stuff. So I thought it was actually a great season. So
thank you. It was definitely an authentic season, and I respect it, and I love that you said that. So thank you.
I know. I am sure that one day people are going to look back and they're going to be like, you know what? We were like on a bandwagon hating on that season when it was actually pretty good. Because yeah, I talk about that all the time. People are sick of hearing me say it. But thank you so much for coming on. Where can everyone find you, your vodka, We Care? Like, plug away.
It's the name of the game. It's ElizabethLynnVargas.com, Elizabeth Lynn Vargas on Instagram, Elizabeth Lynn Vargas on TikTok, Elizabeth Lynn Vargas everywhere. And then the vodka is VargasVodka.com. So just the name of it, but you can also find it on my Instagram. The We Care Rescue Ranch is WeCareRescueRanch.org, or it's on my Instagram. My Instagram is my primary focus of contacting. For anybody who needs to contact me for anything, please reach out. My assistant, Robin White, will directly DM you. And if there's an emergency or anything, you will be contacted immediately.
That's it for this week, guys. Thanks so much for listening. If you want to find out where to follow the show, where to sign up for Patreon and everything, just check the show notes. Of course, if you're in California, cop some of that Vargas vodka, and I will be back with a brand new episode next week. Thanks so much for listening. Bye.